This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore, expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. In the news, U.S. Airlines are releasing plans to return the 737 MAX to service. Pilots are being advised to hold off participation in clinical vaccine trials. Southwest Airlines warns of its first ever furlough. In-flight cell phone calls are off the table at the FCC. A final rule is announced for traveling by air with service animals, and the Paris Air Show is canceled for 2021. It's all coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 631 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and with me this episode is David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian and military aviation expert.
Hello, everyone. Greetings into welcome to December. Only a couple weeks left of this debacle we call 2020, but yeah. Looking forward to talking about things that hopefully we never talk about again. Oh, did I mention 737s? I'm sorry.
Also with us is Max Trescott, host of Aviation News Talk Podcast. He's the National CFI of the Year and expert on the Cirrus aircraft.
Hello, Max and David. We were just talking about 2020. I don't know if you've seen this, but someone has proposed a new emergency code for the transponder. Instead of squawking 7,700, yeah, 7,700, you'll now squawk 2020.
Hey.
Because that's a disaster.
That is for sure. Well, this week we've got a short episode for you because I'm still out camping, but I've briefly re-entered civilization to find some marginal hotel Wi-Fi. We'll see how well that works out. So let's jump right into some of the aviation news from the past week. Are you guys ready?
Ready from the West.
Ready.
From CNET, U.S. Airlines detail plans for resuming Boeing 737 MAX flights. As David indicates, it's another week. We got to have another 737 MAX story. And there are some mandated system changes and training requirements that we've talked about previously before an airline can fly the 737 MAX. But, Mr. Trescott, in the U.S., we see some airlines that are already making some return-to-service announcements.
You know, I'm really kind of happy to hear this. American Airlines has already done a test flight, and they're going to have a regularly scheduled route starting at the end of this month with the 737 MAX. So it's great to see that we're getting near the end of this debacle. It's been very, very painful for everyone involved, especially for Boeing, especially for the families of those people who died in the two accidents that occurred. Boeing, I think, is going to really have be taking a long-term hit. Last year, they had 117 MAX cancellations. This year through October, they've had 448 cancellations. I saw another story elsewhere that said that, of course, the bulk of their profits come from the single-aisle airliners like the 737, and that if you look over the forecast for the next 10 years, it looks like they're going to have a much smaller share of the single-aisle airliner market than they have had in the past. So this is going to have a very dramatic long-term effect on them as a company. But it's great to see that airlines are going through a lot of work right now to get these aircraft back in the skies.
And the three United States airlines that operate the 737 MAX at this point they have some similarities in terms of how they're treating this with passengers. American, United, and Southwest seem to all be saying that if you've got some qualms about flying on that aircraft, that you can rebook without penalties. There's some variations in the requirements there for those three airlines, but the American says you can change your itinerary and fly to another city within a 300-mile radius with no extra charge. And if you cancel your trip, because of concerns about flying that airplane, you'll receive a travel credit. United is rebooking you at no charge or giving you a refund if you don't want to fly on a MAX aircraft. And United starts their service first quarter 2021. As you mentioned, Max, American starts at the end of December. And Southwest is looking to start in the second quarter of 2021. And if you are concerned, you can rebook to a flight on a 737 on a Dash 700 or a Dash 800 without paying a fare difference if the origin and destination cities are the same. Or you can get a full refund or credit towards future travel, depending on your ticket type. So, you know, watch your reservations and the information and stay close to the requirements of the particular airline if this is something that's of concern for you. As for me, you know, I'm almost tempted to, you know, find a 737 MAX flight that goes somewhere interesting and just do it. And so I can say that, hey, put my, money where my mouth is, my life where my mouth is, and say that I don't really have any issues with flying on the 737 MAX on a U.S. airline at all.
That was the question I was going to ask the co-host here was, would you do it? And I'm with you. I have zero qualms about flying the 737 MAX, and probably because, as I think about it, when pilots train and check out on new aircraft types, the thing they pay the most attention to are those little things that are different, especially the ones that can get you in trouble. Those are the things people train on. Those are the things that people think about every time they step into the cockpit. Everybody to fly a 737 MAX from here on forward will be thinking about the procedure for, you know, how to, remedy, any kind of problem that they have with the MCAS system. So if those problems are encountered in the future, I think pilots are going to respond to them quickly and correctly. So I have no qualms about flying them. What about you, David?
You know, I'm the guy that wants to fly urban air mobility and be packages for things without pilots. So I would have no problem flying a 737 MAX. Like we've said, it's probably, and I think Boeing has said this, or at least the American press conference came up with it, it's probably the safest aircraft right now on the planet, just because it's micromanaged as far as everything about it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that it's been...
What scares me is if a 737 MAX has something go wrong that we would regard as something not out of the normal, like an engine failure or something like that. And will that immediately mean that all of a sudden the airlines are going to just revert to, we got to ground it, a normal 737 loses an engine mid-flight, you know, and has a contained or even an uncontained engine failure. The 737s in the rest of the universe aren't grounded. A 737 MAX having any sort of issue, I wonder what the reaction will be going forward. And I guess that's my concern more, that anything that goes wrong with that airplane will be over-scrutinized going forward.
Yeah, that would be hard to recover from it. Yeah, if something else comes up that's serious, then I think that would be cause for the American public to completely lose confidence in it. But, you know, one thing we've talked about is the idea of, will the airplane be rebranded? And there's an interesting piece from CNN. It's titled Post-Crash Recovery, How One Airline Plans to Restore Confidence in the Boeing 737 MAX. And I see one of the things that they've decided is to not rebrand the plane, which I actually think is the right thing to do.
I agree. And given what the mitigations that you've talked about in the previous article, like Southwest saying, if you see a 737 MAX listed on your ticket or itinerary and that really scares you, you can change your flight somehow else. I think that's being upfront, and I think that will cause less pain than rebranding it and trying to hide the fact. You know, the rebranding comes off as it's a cover up, and
exactly.
nobody wants that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that that would be seen just the way you say, David, is that they're trying to hide something. They're not telling us the truth about it, and so I think American is doing the right thing there. And as for them being the first to fly the MAX again. There's a quote from American's COO, David Seymour. He says, "We didn't intend to be first to put the MAX back in the air, but the only way to truly build confidence is by flying it," he says. "You don't build that back by sitting on the ground." It's kind of a slow start.
Somebody's got to bite the bullet. Someone's got to be first. Yeah. So good for American Airlines for being first.
Yeah. So they start first with it's a single daily round trip between Miami and New York LaGuardia. As we said just a few minutes ago, that starts December 29th, 2020. And then in January of the new year, 2021, American is looking to, ramp up to 36 flights. That's a monthly rate, which is still kind of low, but they'd add New York's JFK and Washington, DCA. So I think that makes sense, too. A ramp up, I think, is appropriate.
Interesting. It's not. I don't think any of those are American Airline hubs. It's sort of they're flying point to point, but they're not flying through a hub system. So just an observation. Maybe I'm wrong. All those airline geeks out there can correct me, I'm sure. The address is maxtrescott at airplaygeeks.com.
Thank you, Max.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that American isn't flying it to a hub, but I guess Miami to Florida is kind of a optimal sort of medium range flight for it and go from there.
Well, and that's a pretty heavily traveled route, especially in the wintertime. So I would imagine that means there are going to be a lot of alternatives that people have if they don't want to fly the MAX. And American may have other flights on that route that they can switch as well, too. There was a number that really stuck out to me in that article you just mentioned, Max. And that is that it says American has invested over 64,000 man hours in storing, maintaining, and readying its plane for a return to service. So when you mothball an aircraft, there's a lot involved with doing that. It's not just as simple as putting it there and parking it. Now, there's a lot to do to maintain it every week, and then there's a lot to do to bring it back into service. So this is a huge effort.
Yeah, it really is. There's some information about the time it takes to bring the aircraft back online. And in fact, TechOps at American Airlines has said that it'll take 6 to 8 days for each aircraft to be compliant with the new requirements for the MCAS software updates and also those flight control system rewirings. But the software updates don't take that long. TechOps says about 6 hours. But the rewiring of certain flight control systems, that's where the time is, and that's what leads to 6 to 8 days for each airplane.
Takes a while to catch all those lizards and get them out of the airplane.
Yeah.
Now, that's the thing you don't want. You want them sealed well enough so that you don't have small rodents running around in the airplane. I'm sure that's a major consideration when they go into storage.
Not to mention you also have to position the aircraft for ops. Mm. Once you get it flyable, then you got to move it someplace. Yeah. So that's a couple of days moving. Yeah. Okay, can we go talk about something else now, please?
Slightly. We can talk about vaccines. We've commented in the past about how consumer confidence in flying, kind of hinges perhaps on the availability of vaccine, a COVID vaccine. But Max, you found an interesting item in AvWeb about pilots and vaccines.
This one really blindsided me. This was not one that I saw coming at all. Headline says FAA reviewing whether pilots can take COVID vaccine. My initial reaction was, what?
Yeah, what?
You mean there's a reason I might not be able to take it? I mean, certainly a large percentage of the public has been anxiously awaiting that. We see, hour-by-hour coverage of the progress, and then suddenly we find out from this article that the FAA hasn't yet determined whether pilots will be able to get vaccinated against COVID-19 and keep their medicals. So that's a new piece of news to me. Apparently, ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, has been telling its members not to take part in clinical trials because they would lose their medicals perhaps for a long time. And again, that was another aspect of this that hadn't occurred to me. Yet I just thought, boy, if somebody wants to participate in the trial, great. But of course, we have heard that there are people that are getting some kinds of minor reactions for a short period of time after they have taken the vaccine in the clinical trials. And I'm sure the FAA is concerned that they want to find out whether or not it's only a short period of time, such as, wow, now you're feeling a little inconvenience for 8 or 12 hours, but hey, does it perpetuate itself? Is it something where in a month from now you're still not at 100% or something like that? So I understand their caution in doing this, and it's very timely because this week, December 8th through 10th, FDA committee is meeting whether or not to give emergency approval for the first of these vaccines from Pfizer. So this is very relevant. It's very timely. And pilots, you need to keep this in mind. And I think we'll just have to stand by for further information from the FAA.
Yeah, that's right. They're waiting for this upcoming meeting of the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. And ALPA is saying that since no trial COVID-19 vaccine has full FDA approval, the FAA considers participation in COVID-19 vaccine trials medically disqualifying for pilots for an indefinite period. So, yeah.
But interesting enough, if you catch the virus and recover from it, you're not medically disqualified.
Yeah, because you haven't taken any drugs. You just had a virus.
Well, no, but with all the long-term effects that they're discovering, impairments and dizzy spells and stuff like that. I'm surprised we haven't heard any warnings from the FAA about medicals for people who've overcome or survived COVID. Here it is, the prevention. We're worried about the prevention, but we're not really worried about if you catch it or not. It's just kind of a very interesting way of looking at it from the FAA, but it's the FAA.
Well, and the FAA, of course, is really designed as an agency to move slowly because they're in charge of safety, and it doesn't make sense to rush into things because right now the system is set up pretty well, which means you don't want to really tinker with it too much. So I can see why they're taking precautionary moves on this. Hopefully this will turn out not to be a big issue and pilots will get the clearance to take to the vaccine if they choose. But wow, I mean, this story has all kinds of wrinkles and we're finding yet another wrinkle to this pandemic affecting aviation.
That's right. Another another fallout of this Southwest Airlines. They're warning that they could furlough 6,800 employees.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Well, it would occur in either March 15th or April 1st, it says. Now, generally, you have to give employees 60 days notice of a furlough. And this is a little bit in advance of that. And so the union is saying that Southwest is kind of trying a scare tactic here. But, I mean, in any event, they're talking about potential furlough that would affect 12% of the airline staff.
And there was a story that was just out today, I believe, that said Lufthansa has announced that they'll be laying off 30,000 people before the end of this year, and they expect to lay off an additional 10,000 next year. So we're not out of the woods yet by any stretch.
No. Now, with the union claiming that Southwest is playing to the fears of the employees to try to, well, as a negotiation tactic. But in its defense, Southwest says, and this is, boy, what does this sound like, you know? Southwest said that in some states they require a 90-day advance notice. And this is still a little bit ahead of that, but the airline said it wanted to pad that a bit in case of mailing delays. I read that, and I'm just thinking, oh, it sounds a little bit like our last election.
Well, in all fairness, having marketed legal, having been responsible for legal notifications all those years as a marketer, you have to, I mean, some insurance notifications were up to 120 days out, some were 60 days out, some were 90 days out, right? As a general rule, the 90-day was the was what the rule was. And to be, you needed to allow time. Now, mind you, the post office is really screwed up currently. And I wouldn't mail anything this time of year to anybody because the busiest 2 weeks of the year are between Thanksgiving and December 15th for mail volumes.
So, Max, that explains why we haven't gotten our Christmas presents from David yet.
I guess so. Well, we'll just be patient.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, well, you know, I'm the only one working. You'll get your helicopter toys from the museum sometime in the next.
All right.
Okay, so a different kind of a topic completely. And this is, remember this, we talked about this long, long time ago about whether or not passengers should be able to make and receive cell phone calls in flight. And the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission, has been looking at that for a long time. And they have just, well, they've just sort of pulled the plug on that. The FCC says the record is insufficient to determine any reasonable solution that would strike an appropriate balance of competing interests. There is strong opposition to the commission's proposals from many commenters in this proceeding, including our nation's airline pilots and flight attendants. So the FCC is no longer going to look at the at this concept of passengers making in-flight cell phone calls because they couldn't figure it out, I guess, and everybody was arguing about whether we should allow that or not. And so the FCC, I guess, threw up their hands and said, all right, we're not going to do anything.
Hip, hip, hooray.
Yeah, I know. I'm hooray. Fine with it.
For those of us who didn't want to hear the person sitting next to us have a conversation, yeah, I'm okay with I'm good with it, but let's not kid ourselves anymore and say, well, the phones interfere with the transmission of the aircraft or sabotage the aircraft, because we all know that that's dead wrong. But for public courtesy and just privacy, et cetera, it's a good thing not to have cell phones on or calls being made.
Yeah, I agree completely. I don't want to sit next to some yutz who's screaming into their cell phone trying to talk over the noise of flight.
And I love this quote. Apparently it's from Charles West in his comment that was submitted for this rulemaking proceeding. I don't know who Charles West is, but I agree with him completely. Flying commercially is already a sufficiently miserable experience without being forced to listen to other passengers' conversations. Go Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, I think we've probably talked in the past about how when people talk on cell phones, they get louder. And that's probably because cell phones are, you know, battery constrained, and so they don't provide feedback of your voice through them. So you don't hear yourself, and so you speak louder, something that landlines didn't have as big an issue on because, of course, they had an infinite amount of power supplied by the phone company, so they could waste some of that power on providing the feedback of your voice, and people would talk more quietly on landlines. But With cell phones, they're always so darn loud.
That's right.
Well, you know what? Airplane mode maybe then should be, okay, if anyone's listening, airplane mode should enable text. I wouldn't mind being able to text somebody from an airplane, but I don't want voice transmission. So that's what we need to figure out.
Yeah. In the meantime,
none of it.
None of it.
Well, and there is some texting capability from the airplane as it is now. I've been able to send text. So, for example, if you buy the Wi-Fi service, at least on the iPhone, I know that they've integrated the SMS text messages with a service that will go out via the internet. You don't have to send it out through your cell phone. And that's great. You know, I've loved having conversations from text in the air. And, you know, you can accomplish just about as much. I mean, you don't need to hear the loud person talking to communicate.
But how do your students feel about you texting the ground while they're flying the airplane? I mean, is that really kosher? I mean, as you're frantically, your thumb's going, you're never going to believe this guy.
That's right.
I'm going to die if you're getting this message.
Now, I was talking, of course, about sitting in the back of a commercial airliner. We don't have Wi-Fi in most of the small airplanes that I fly in.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's another topic that we've talked about for years, I think, which is service animals and emotional support animals on airlines. And earlier this year, the Department of Transportation issued an NPRM on this topic and received more than 15,000 comments. But the final rule is out about now. The DOT is revising its Air Carrier Access Act regulation, which concerns the transportation of service animals by air. And the final rule, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's rather interesting. But under the final rule, a service animal is defined as a dog. It has to be a dog that is individually trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of the person with a disability. So that's one key aspect. Another is that the final rule no longer considers an emotional support animal to be a service animal.
You mean I can't bring my emu on board anymore?
You could you could attempt to as a pet. But because it's not considered a service animal under this rule, that means it's a pet and the airlines can charge you to bring your pet on board, which they can't with a service animal, or a variety of other limitations or restrictions. So that's pretty significant too. An emotional support animal is no longer considered to be a service animal. And the rule, it requires airlines to treat psychiatric service animals. I really hadn't seen that distinction previously, but they have to be treated the same as other service animals. But the airlines have some flexibility. The airlines may require forms that attest to a service animal's health, behavior, and training. Those forms are developed by the DOT. The airlines can require that this form certifies that if you're taking a long flight, that the service animal can either fly the entire flight without relieving itself or can relieve itself in a sanitary manner. But there are other things the airlines can do. They can require, if they want, that folks flying with service animals provide the DOT service animal form up to 48 hours in advance. Also, if they want to, they can require a passenger to provide those forms at the departure gate when asked. They can limit the number of service animals traveling with a single passenger to two. That seems like enough. They can also, if they want, this is not a requirement, but the airlines can make it a requirement for that airline that service animals have to fit within the person's foot space on the aircraft. Also that service animals have to be harnessed, leashed, or tethered at all times. So those are things that airlines can do. There is a prohibition under this rule. Airlines are prohibited from requiring passengers with a disability who are traveling with a service animal to physically check in at the airport instead of using the online check-in process. So that means you can use the online check-in process. The airlines cannot demand that you check in physically. And it also finally allows airlines to continue to refuse transportation to service animals if they have aggressive behavior, pose a direct threat to the health or safety of others. And also they prohibit airlines from refusing to transport a service animal solely based on breed. So that's a summary. The final rule takes effect 30 days after publication in the Federal Register, which probably won't take too long.
That's great. This is an area that's just been rife for regulation. I mean, I think a lot of people like to avoid regulation whenever possible. But frankly, when you have 100 or more people crammed together in a tight little space, it's very easy for people to start impinging upon the rights of others. And I think that the lack of rules really let things run a little bit amok, especially with the emotional support to animal side of it. And so, yeah, I'm sure this will inconvenience some people who had legitimate reasons, you know, for bringing an emotional support animal. But I think it also helps to kind of limit the many people who were just taking advantage of this loophole and were, you know, bringing along whatever pet they wanted to. So kudos to the Department of Transportation for putting some rules and regulating this so that we've got, a consistent set of standards that can be applied.
And next step will be to see which airlines take advantage of, you know, the various items that are allowable under this rule. I don't know if there'll be a difference between, from one airline to the next, or they'll all kind of converge on the same set of rules. It'd be nice if they all converged.
I'm just thinking 2020 is starting to wind up a little better than we thought. No cell phones on airplanes.
Yeah.
fewer are the crazy animals being brought on board. I mean, this year is working out better than I expected.
It is. Next year is still going to be tough, though. We see some events have already been canceled for next year. We have one that is sort of near and dear to the heart of our reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari. And he passed along this little bit of information.
Hey, Max. Not great news. For the first time in 30 years, your reporter at large will not be going to the Paris Air Show. This is because this morning, the French Aerospace Industries Association and the board of directors of the Paris Air Show announced in a press release they're canceling the 2021 Paris Air Show. The Paris Air Show is held every 2 years on an odd year in June. This year, they've canceled it because of COVID. It's surprising that they canceled it this early. I suspect it was because they had contracts that needed to go out roughly 6 months in advance. We're not done with this COVID stuff. I was hoping we'd be done with it by then. This is your reporter at large, stuck at home. Frequency change approved.
I didn't realize he's been attending for that length of time, 30 years.
I didn't know he was that old. I thought he was a teenager.
Yeah. So this was going to take place June 21st through 27th in 2021. But I've seen a number of other events that have been canceled, events that particularly in the first half of the year, just the investment in planning, the time also in planning, the lead time. And the, you know, out-of-pocket expenses that are incurred well before the date of a major event like this are pretty significant. And, the penalty, the cost of canceling it after you've initially planned to hold the event is can be pretty tough to
No.
Yeah.
Seriously.
David?
We're going to have a recession, and who the hell is going to sell airplanes at Paris?
Oh,
there aren't going to be any new airplanes. I mean, Paris is not an air show. It's a long week worth of sales, negotiations, and press releases.
It's a business event.
It's a business event. It's always been a business event with an air show. A boring one at that. But
yeah, the launch pad keeps going back each year.
Well, that being said, the economic universe next year in June will not be ripe for something like a Paris air show. And, you know, it's all indoors, for with the exception of the air show portion. Most of the exhibitors are indoors. So you've got a large convention center with hundreds upon thousands of people walking around. Talk about a super spreader event. Common sense prevailed on this one. The FAI, good for them, because Paris should not happen next year.
Hey, do you remember years ago when the toilet paper shortage just materialized out of nothing because one night Johnny Carson said on the air, there's a toilet paper shortage?
Yeah.
David, I can't believe you just started a recession.
Yeah, David, it'll be David.
Everyone's going to go, oh, there's going to be a recession now because David said so. Hey, we are on just such a high note here, man. No cell phones, no emotional support animals, and now you have to ruin it by jinxing it all and starting a recession.
Well, no, but what the really sad part was, I thought you were joking when you were talking about years ago when we had the great toilet paper. But I mean, that was only just March.
No. This was the original one.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, I thought you, before you brought up Johnny Carson, I'm going, it really only was just March. I get that it feels like it was 30 years ago, but.
No, this was a repeat this year.
All right, what's up with the geeks? So speaking of...
Tonight's guest Max Flight, thanks for being on the show. Could you tell us about your experience this weekend at, as you said several times tonight, a quote, real air show, unquote?
It was a real air show. This was, I volunteered at the Holiday Flying Festival and Car Show at Lakeland, Florida, Sun and Fun. And this was December 4th and 5th this year, 2020. And it was actually a fairly well attended event. There were some interesting things going. I mean, it was a real, like I said, it was a real air show. They had the Central Florida Classic Stoll qualifying and finals. Those aircraft are kind of amazing. They had a great air show. It included the F-35 demo team, F-16 demo team, some P-51s, Black Daggers, Paradigm. They had a balloon glow, which I always find exciting. And, of course, static aircraft displays, a bunch of vendors. They had a car show. They even had a general aviation town hall. And, you know, it was kind of like a mini two-day or day-and-a-half Sun and Fun. And I think that a lot of people just were tired of being at home and wanted to get out and wanted to get out with their families. It was by and large families that I saw, groups that had presumably been their own little bubble back at the house, and they remained their little bubble at the air show, sometimes fairly distant, sometimes not so much. It seemed to be a successful event. By any stretch of the imagination these days.
Well, you were a volunteer. What did you do?
So at the week-long Sun and Fun event, of course, Sun and Fun Radio is operating. Max, last time you and I were at Sun and Fun, we were doing some things on the radio there. The radio station wasn't operating this time, but what they did do is conduct some video interviews that were streamed live on Facebook Live, and then we'll go up on YouTube as well. So I had volunteered some time ago to be the talking head. We had little teams of three, the talking head, the cameraman, and the security person to sort of keep stray people from wandering in front of the camera and things like that. So those are up and available. Being out in the, you know, in the woods since then, I haven't seen many of those. I did have an opportunity to interview the pilot from who flew the F-35, and she was just really kind of amazing. The performance was amazing, and I was able to track down the team, and we got permission to go over to the slightly off-site hangar where the F-35 was being kept, along with the F-16 and some P-51s. And after her performance on Friday, after her performance, hightailed it over to the hangar and had a chance to talk with her for a bit. I'm hoping to bring that interview to you all here on this podcast, but there was some kind of an audio problem. In the first part of my interview, there's basically no audio, which is kind of a problem. So I'll take a look at that and see what kind of remains. But you can find those videos up the Sun and Fun Radio on Facebook, and we'll be up on their YouTube channel as well, if it's not up there already. Let's see. So, Max Trescott, what's new with you aviation-wise?
Well, let's see. First of all, I'm getting the band back together. One of my favorite lines from, what was that, the Blues Brother movie. What a great, fun movie. I had Rob Mark on the Aviation News Talk this week, and episode 170, we talked about go-arounds and how to avoid killing yourself while doing it. He told an interesting story about in the very, very early days of his flying career, very shortly after he got his private, that he bungled a go-around and was actually concerned that he might kill himself in the process. So it's an interesting story. We've got a number of different interesting stories about go-arounds. And then the other thing which is significant in my life is that a little over a week ago, I stopped flying and teaching in the air again. Folks may remember that I was at home for about 4 months, and then I started teaching in the simulator for a couple of months. I was flying for almost 3 months, and during that time, I was really productive. I got 4 people through their check rides. One gentleman who'd bought a Vision Jet got his type rating, 2 instrument students, and 1 private student. So these were people who I'd been working with previously and basically was able to just spend 2 or sometimes 3 weeks with them, get them prepared for the check ride, and off they went. And if you really want to know what got me back home again here, it's the spiking levels of COVID. You know, back in the spring in my county, we were averaging maybe 20 cases a day. And over the summer, maybe 100 cases a day. And the day I decided, we had hit 760 cases a day. We hit a new high a couple days ago of about 850. Today, it spiked again to 1,450. Hmm. So that's in a 10-day period, you know, we've doubled. And, you know, it's just, I kind of look at the risk reward, you know, benefit, and it's, you know what? The risk is going up and the benefit's no stronger. So I'm going to stay home for a while and just do simulator training. The thing I like about the simulator training is I really can stay well distanced from the person that I'm working with. Sometimes I'm standing up at the back of the room, you know, both wearing masks. So it feels like a very safe environment as compared to flying. And I think I'll just stay home for a month or so, see what happens, and just continue to monitor it. For me, it seems like what pilots do, you know, with risk management. They're constantly assessing the environment, what's changing, constantly adapting, coming up with new plans to address it. So this is Max starting to hibernate a little bit as things are looking just a little bit more dangerous out there.
Yeah, probably a wise decision. All right, let's see. We have a listener poll to catch up on back from episode 628. And we asked two questions in our completely unscientific poll here. First question was, do you intend to fly to a vacation destination in 2021? And in the responses, we see that 50%, half of the respondents, said that they do intend to fly to a vacation destination next year. 16% said no. And 34% said maybe. Then we asked, do you expect to fly for business in 2021? And there, 41% said yes, 36% said no, and 23% said maybe. Now, again, it's totally unscientific poll. We don't know what the numbers, the breakout would look like in a, call it normal year or a pre-COVID year, but that's just a little indication of where people are thinking, which I thought, you know, for vacation, half the respondents saying, yeah, they do plan to fly next year. I thought that was somewhat encouraging. It's a little higher than I would originally have thought.
It is encouraging. My answers, by the way, are no and yes. So no, I don't expect to be flying for vacation, but yes, I do expect to be flying for business because, you know, a lot of the work I do is with people who are either moving an airplane across the country or someone who's picking up a new Vision Jet at the Cirrus delivery center. So I always end up on the airlines for at least one of those legs to get to the starting point for any of these flights. So yes, I'm looking forward to getting back into the airline seats sometime in 2021. It's always fun to fly the airlines to get to fly nice new airplanes.
All right. And on kind of a sad note, Micah found an obituary for Admiral Ralph Weymouth, who died January 22nd, 2020. And it's significant for lots of reasons, but one of which is that we interviewed him for episode 566. Vice Admiral Weymouth at that time was 102, the oldest living graduate from the U.S. Naval Academy. And just with a career that just an amazing career. He served as a pilot and commanding officer of VB-16, which was a squadron of 36 dive bombers in World War II in the Pacific Theater. He flew carrier missions. He participated in some major naval battles. One conflict included was called the Mission Beyond Darkness, which was an aerial attack on the Japanese fleet where they sank three carriers and some other ships. And he was awarded the Navy Cross for extraordinary heroism there. He also, during the Korean War, commanded Carrier Air Group 11, served as the naval representative to the Joint Operations Center of the 5th Air Force and the 8th Army. He's also active in the Vietnam War, where he commanded Anti-Submarine Warfare Group 3. An amazing individual. It's almost a year now since he passed away, but we're just learning of it now, and it's worth mentioning. Interestingly enough, just by kind of coincidence, as we record this today, is National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day in the United States. And he was active at that time. So sort of an interesting coincidence. All right. Sort of hate to end things on a sad note, but such as it is, we want to thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. I know this has been a very short episode. Next week, we have a really exciting guest scheduled, someone that I think most of you will recognize, and we're really looking forward to that. But meantime, you can find us at airplanegeeks.com. You can also find our show notes for this episode at airplanegeeks.com/631. And you can reach us on email at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. All right, David Vanderhoof, let's hear where we can find you.
You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, if you can spell Vanderhoof, or the town in British Columbia, whatever you want to do. You can always find us on our Slack listener team. We can do that by sending us an email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and you can join the conversation all week long. And of course, should my co-host be able to find Wi-Fi or not preoccupied being somewhere in a wilderness somewhere, we will have a UAV Digest show on Friday.
Yes, we're really going to try for that. All right, Max Trescott, how about you?
Well, they can find me at home for at least the foreseeable future. But if they want to communicate with me, head on out to aviationnewstalk.com, click on contact at the top, and you can send me an email. And Max, where do people find you in Florida?
Let's see. Right now, I am in Lake City, Florida, getting ready to dive into another national forest here in northern Florida. Kind of spending a little more time here than I thought I might, because I tell you guys, winter in Florida is not half bad, at least compared to Connecticut. So occasionally you can find me on LinkedIn. Just look for Max Flight. As David said, over at the UAVDigest.com and at PaxXPodcast.com, as well as on the Airplane Geeks listener team, although not lately much. And for those of you who have sent us email, apologize for the slow response, but I'll get to them sometime soon and share them with all of the co-hosts. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Keep the blue side up.
And thanks for listening.